So good evening. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Stephen Gassner, and I've been practicing with this center since 1995, and I've been doing Buddhist practice since 1980, both in the Zen tradition and at other Vipassana centers. So the topic of my talk tonight is generosity, or as translated in the Pali, Dana. And some people, when they hear that this is a Dana talk, they immediately get very uptight, and they hear, this is a Dana rap. And for those of you who don't know what a Dana rap is, I'll tell you. In the tradition of insight meditation that's practiced here, other centers where they have retreats, the teachers do not charge any money for their retreats. And a matter of fact, there's starting a tradition of even not charging for the retreats themselves. And so the way they're supported is completely by donations. In the Goenka tradition, you may have heard of Goenka, who's a famous Indian Vipassana teacher. He doesn't charge anything for his retreats, including food and lodging, and those are 10 days. But like Spirit Rock, at the last night of the retreat, someone gives a talk on Dana and how that teachings are supported through people's generosity. And it's basically, as to summarize, a talk for people to give money. So people immediately, when they hear the Dana rap, they get uptight. But to put your minds at ease, I'm not going to ask you for money tonight or to give any money. And Dana is a lot more than that. Generosity is considered the foundation and beginning of the Buddha's teachings. When many people would go to the Buddha for teachings, the first thing he would have them do is practice generosity. A meditation master from Thailand's forest tradition came to the U.S. several years ago. After just a short time, he said rather bemusedly, "In Asia, the classical sequence of teachings and practice is first generosity, then morality, then meditation or insight. But here in the U.S., the sequence seems to be meditation first, then morality, and after some time, as a kind of appendix, there is some teaching about generosity. What's going on here?" And I used to hear for many years that generosity was the foundation of Buddhism, and I have great faith in the practice, and so I believed it. But I didn't fully understand it until I started preparing for this talk. And then a couple of weeks ago at Gill's intermediate mindfulness class, a woman said, "You know, in all this meditation is very self-centered, and all we're doing is working on ourselves. What about the rest of the world?" And then it hit me that if we started off practicing with generosity and then developed into morality practice, and then inside practice, such questions wouldn't come up. And then I realized the power of starting off the practice with generosity. In many Buddhist cultures and other cultures, generosity is inculcated as children. Ajahn Sumedho, who's one of the most senior monks in this tradition and is an abbot of a monastery in England, spent many years in Thailand. And he said, "Children are encouraged to offer dana almost from the time they are born. You see mothers taking their little babies out to the place where monks walk on alms rounds and have the baby offer some little tidbits into the monk's bowl." Ajahn Sumedho went on to say 9 out of 10 times when he gave a bottle of soda to a child, the child would share it with other children. Sharing is taught at an early age. Jack Kornfield gives an example of in the book Path with Heart about a Native American tradition where there's a ceremony where young children are showered with food and drink and clothing. Then members of the tribe cry out, "I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm cold." From their abundance, the children are then led to distribute the bounty to the others in need. I was raised in the Jewish tradition. I remember when I went to Hebrew school, I mean, every time you were supposed to give a little money to the charity box, which went out to orphanages, and so we trained from an early age in that. Generosity is seen in many cultures. A lot of the teachers in this tradition have studied in Asia, and they all comment, especially in Burma, that you can go there for and practice indefinite amount of time, and it will not cost you anything. There's a number of people from this center who are in Burma doing that right now. And Gil comments that when he was studying in Burma, he had problems with his tooth, and like the best dentist in Burma came and practiced on him. And to them, it's a real honor to support people who are doing the teachings. And people from all means would provide the daily meal at the centers. And they, and as one teacher said, there would be such joy and beaming on these people's faces. There's also many other cultures, many tribal cultures. One never turns away a stranger for a meal. National Geographic several years ago did a special on the Middle East, and the reporter spent some days with the Bedouins. And the Bedouins are nomadic people who live with tents and go around the desert with their camels and their sheep. And they always welcomed strangers in, and they fed them and gave them a place to sleep. As you may know the story in the Bible of Lot, and Lot bringing in the angels and protecting them with their lives when the people wanted to attack them. That tradition still is around today in many countries. I work with a gentleman from Afghanistan, and he was telling me people thought that the Afghanistani people supported the Germans during World War II, and that wasn't the case. It was that when Germans asked for refuge in someone's house, it's tradition that they would protect that person with their life. So even if a British person needed refuge, they would protect them with their lives. What amazes many people is in a lot of these cultures, people are not as rich as we are, don't have as high a standard of living, yet they're so generous. And there's many psychological studies on these people, and what they found is that inwardly the people feel a sense of abundance, and they have a good sense about themselves. So a key question to ask oneself is how much do we need, and do we feel abundant? A story is told of a man, it's a true story, who has a net worth of $50 million, and he's presently in psychotherapy because he feels he doesn't have enough. This is one extreme. Buddhist monks had said all they need is food, clothing, shelter, and medicine. That's another extreme, and we as lay people come somewhere in the middle. We don't live in the extreme of monks and nuns, but we don't have the problem of having $50 million on our hands. So how do we practice generosity? The thing to remember is that generosity is a practice, just like meditation practice or loving kindness practice or anything else we practice. It's something that can be cultivated. Many people have the attitude, well, I don't feel generous today, so I won't be generous. And if we have that attitude with our meditation practice or with an exercise program or a diet program, we wouldn't make very much progress. Since many of us have not been inculcated with generosity since childhood, we must learn different ways and use other tools. The expression in starting to look at generosity, you may have heard the expression charity begins at home. Well, the same thing with generosity. And there's two key questions to ask. Do I feel a sense of abundance in myself, and am I generous towards myself? As loving kindness practice, which we'll do later, is always practiced on oneself first. Generosity should always be practiced on oneself. And this is an actual quote from the Buddha. Most people find this surprising. But he says, "Do not neglect your own need for another's, no matter how great. Having discerned your own need, do what is really useful." Now, this is contrary to many people feel in a spiritual path. They feel they should give up everything and be very self-sacrificing. But if you don't take care of your own needs, you're going to become very resentful after a while and very unhappy, which isn't conducive to the spiritual life. So in starting, we ask these two questions. If you're not generous towards yourself, why not? And this is something we all need to examine, and some people have real issues with this, and they may need help from the outside, either from friends or a spiritual teacher or counselors. I had an interesting example last week of a person not being generous with themselves, and I helped them. One of my colleagues is working really hard and putting a lot of hours and used to exercise a lot and spend more time with his family, and he was complaining to me, and we got done with a meeting and I told him I was going to lunch, and he asked if I can join. He says, yeah, and we went over to the cafeteria and he said, we're going to take the food back to our desk. I said, no, Craig, I mean, if you go back to your desk, people are going to bother you and you're going to work, and why don't you just relax? And so we got our lunch and we talked to each other about our families and caught up. And afterwards, he really thanked me to have this little vacation away from work. A classic example is given by Jack Kornfield. Many years ago, he was teaching a number of retreats and long retreats, and he was just really tired of interviewing students and basically was getting burnt out, and he didn't know what to do. And a great Tibetan Lama was coming to town. He figured he'd talk to him. He can give some special teachings or special mantras. And the Lama listened to him attentively, and said, I can help you. And he thought, ah, here's the great teaching. He says, you know, you should teach less retreats, shorter retreats, and take more vacations. And Jack realized that was the secret teachings. The general rule at this center for people who do volunteer work is you should only do it while you're enjoying it. If you don't enjoy it, or if you're getting stressed out, don't do it. Everything can pretty much take care of itself. Many people today are learning to be kinder and gentler with themselves. There are many ways to be generous with ourselves: getting enough sleep, eating right, having enough time by ourselves. Even setting time for daily meditation practice or sitting a retreat can be thought of as a way of being generous with ourselves. Opening to the love we feel towards ourselves, we're able to be generous with ourselves. People may ask how generous and are concerned about being overindulgent. Here again, discrimination is necessary. If one is constantly thinking of my needs, my needs, my needs, or I need, I need, I need, one should examine that. Remember, the Buddhist practice is the practice of the middle way. Coupled with the question, are you generous with yourself, is do you feel a sense of abundance? Again, the question to contemplate is how much do I need? A complementary practice to this is the practice of gratitude. When we realize how much we have to be grateful for, we see we have a great deal of abundance and therefore can be generous. The practice of generosity can be characterized by the power of letting go or relinquishing. That is why it's such a powerful practice. We can be generous with ourselves by relinquishing our anger, resentment, and unhappiness. Most people don't think of giving those up. When people think of generosity, they think of being generous with their money. But it's far greater than that. We can be generous with our love, our time, and our possessions. In Zen Buddhism, they have 10 precepts. In the Theravada tradition, they have 5. It's not to kill, not to steal, not to misuse your sexuality, not to lie, and not to take intoxicants. Zen has those 5 and 5 others. One of them is to don't spare the Dharma assets. And Maizumi Roshi translates this as don't be stingy. And like I said, we can be stingy with a lot of things. Our time, there's a very touching story about Martin Buber. Martin Buber was a Jewish philosopher who wrote the classic book, I and Thou, he talks about, he feels there's two basic types of relationships. we have with people. One is the I-it relationship, where we objectify people we're working with, and one is the I-thou, which is more interrelationship between people, and he says that's the relationship people want to have with God. And many people in the Christian community and also in psychotherapy are really influenced by his work. But like in the 1920s or 30s, he tells a story that he was sitting in his study and he was working on some scholarly piece and someone knocked on the door. And he answered it and he really didn't want to be bothered by the person. The person came in to talk to him. And he answered his questions, but he was very brief and terse. And the man took off. And then he found out a week later that the man committed suicide. And after that point, he realized that interpersonal relationships was the most important thing, and that when you interact with people, you must be generous in giving your time to them. When practicing generosity, many things will come up. As I said before, the practice of generosity is characterized by the power of letting go and relinquishing. Here's where other practices come in. The two important ones are mindfulness and discernment. In mindfulness, we can see where we're holding, where we're stingy and greedy. We can feel the suffering in our holding. At first, when we give, we can feel uncomfortableness. We can notice the guilt, I should have given more. Or we can also notice the pride. One can say, I gave X amount of dollars to this cause, aren't I a wonderful person? We can notice it all, and we can notice, as with our meditation, that we can never do it perfectly, or we never do it perfectly. Traditionally, it is taught that generosity can open up on three levels, and this is from Jack Kornfield. The first is called tentative giving. The thought arises to give something away, but then we think, hold on, I may need that someday. We vacillate between giving and not giving, but once we give, we feel the joy of giving. The second giving is called brotherly or sisterly giving. It is an open, equal sharing that offers both energy and material assistance as to a loved one. I have this, so let's share it. We do not hesitate. There is a great joy in this kind of giving. The third kind of giving is called royal giving. In this, we take such delight in the happiness and welfare and happiness of others that our generosity is spontaneous and immediate. This goes beyond equal sharing. We give the best we have so others may enjoy. Our own joy becomes greater with such generosity. We discover in our own heart the abundance of a king or a queen. When one practices generosity for a while, we get such joy out of giving. Some people feel guilty at having this joy. It's a different feeling than an egotistical pride you have from giving, although that may be present also when you give. I'm sure if you all reflect, you can remember an incident where you felt great joy in giving. When the Buddha spoke on reflecting on our goodness, he frequently spoke about the delight in our acts of giving. I knew I was making real spiritual progress when I'd go out for a meal with friends or my wife, and I'd order something really delicious, which I really, really wanted, and I'd get more enjoyment out of sharing it with other people and giving it to other people. A big example of the joy I know my wife and I got is years ago, Sylvia Borstein started this program to raise money at Spirit Rock. They needed to raise like $6 million to build that center. And she had this idea that if she got 1,000 people together to give $1,000, that would be $1 million. And if she couched it, what's $1,000? It's basically a dollar a day for 3 years, which people could understand. And the fundraiser was a big success. It was way over 1,000 people. And so my wife and I joined. And we used to go, on Thanksgiving weekend, a get-together, and people would talk about the joy they gave of giving. But one of the greatest joy was we sat our first retreat there, which was the New Year's retreat in 1998. I walked into the meditation hall, and we saw how gorgeous it was, and we felt such joy that we helped build that. There's also many of us worked for years getting this center, and the joy we all feel now of being here and having other people share it. This feels like our house, and we're having people in here, and we feel such joy having these people in here. We can also feel grateful that we can give, that we are fortunate enough to give. As I stated before, generosity practice in many ways is coupled with gratitude. When we realize how much we have to be grateful for, we feel generous. When I was practicing the Zen Center of Los Angeles, when I sent out their yearly fundraising letter, there was a thing at the bottom that said, "Let the giver be grateful." And this is my opinion, is I think people have a real delusion about their money and their possessions, that it's theirs. In a way, it's true, but if you really reflect on all the conditions that had to happen for one to be in our positions of fortune, how many things had to come together, being born at the right place and having the right education and having the people support us, we played a very small part in obtaining the wealth that we have. True compassion is seen that when you look at the downtrodden, you realize that could be me if my situation was different. Or as the expression goes, "There but for the grace of God go I." So we're grateful that we can give. The act of generosity can encompass the four Brahma Viharas. Now, for those who are new, what the four Brahma Viharas are, the first one is loving kindness, which is the feeling of friendship and kindness towards another person. It's actually meditation, which we'll do later. The second is compassion, feeling the suffering of others and wanting to help. The third is called sympathetic joy. When you see someone else as something happy has happened to them, you feel great joy. And the fourth is equanimity. So this is from Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness by Sharon Salzberg. And she says, "There are also spiritual benefits in giving. A single act of giving has a value beyond that we can imagine. So much of the spiritual path is expressed and realized in giving. Love, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, letting go of grasping, aversion, and delusion. To give is powerful. That is why the Buddha said that if we knew, as he did, the power of giving, we would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it. Sharing food is a metaphor for all giving. When we offer someone food, we are not just giving that person something to eat. We are giving far more. We give strength, health, beauty, clarity of mind, and even life, because none of those things would be possible without food. So when we feed another, this is what we are offering, the sustenance of life itself. In a single moment of offering food, the Buddha said, a great part of our spiritual path is fulfilled. All four of the Brahma Viharas appear in that moment. Metta, loving kindness, is there because we feel goodwill towards the person who is receiving. We want the person to be happy. We feel compassion in that moment because we wish that being to be free from pain or suffering. We experience sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the person's happiness and wanting it to increase. Equanimity manifests in this act of giving, because we are willing to let go of something we have. We are willing to be without it ourselves. All four of those neat qualities are present right here in the one single action. In that one instant of giving, we also abandon the three kalesas, the root tormentors of our hearts. We let go of desire, grasping. We abandon ill will or aversion, a state that creates separateness, distance, withdrawal, a sense of not being at one with another. And we abandon delusion because when we perform a wholesome or skillful action like giving, we understand that what we do in our lives, the choice we make, the values we hold, all of these things count for something. One of the most powerful aspects of delusion or ignorance is the belief that what we do does not really matter. To abandon such delusion is to understand the natural law of karma. Despite appearances, nothing is happenstance. We have the power to align ourselves with certain values and to create the life we want by making wholesome choices. When we are generous, life is tangibly and qualitatively different. And she goes on to say, the Buddha said we should really delight in our giving. Now it's time to talk about money. But I'm not going to ask you for money. Like anything else, this is a practice. What is our attitude about money? Because of my upbringing, I'm not the best person to talk about this, and I'll get into this why. I was brought up in a Jewish background. My father was brought up in an Orthodox household, and my parents gave a good amount to charities. They didn't brag about it or anything. My father had a strong attitude about supporting the synagogue, but he never believed in giving money to the Tuesday night bingos or the Las Vegas nights. He felt people should support the center, and he was generous in supporting it. His sisters were not financially as well off as us, and he gave them money in a very discreet way. My parents were very generous with us, not in spoiling us, but in stressing the need for education. They'd always support us in educational needs. And when we got older, after we got out of the house, they were very generous, and they were very generous to my sister-in-law and brother-in-law and to my wife. With our friends, they were also generous. I mean, this is pretty humorous. One time, this woman I was dating when I was living in Los Angeles, she moved to New York, and my parents met her and took her out and took her out to lunch and even took her shopping for clothes. My father treated his mother-in-law like a queen. Many stories of my father's generosity I never learned until actually when we were putting his eulogy together when he died. I also had an uncle in Canada who was a very devout Orthodox Jew. He was actually a famous philanthropist, both in Canada here and in Israel. He was vice president of Midas Muffler, and when they negotiated the fire insurance policy for the company, he made sure that if there was a fire in the plant and people were out of work, that they were compensated until the plant was put back in, and Midas had to pay healthy premiums for that. In their community, it was a very natural thing to raise money and to give them to good causes. Several years ago, my wife and I were up there for a bar mitzvah, and my cousin was showing us around the neighborhood, and she was showing us this senior citizen home that they built, and next to it was a daycare center, and the senior citizens worked in the daycare center, and she had such joy showing this to us. So this is the atmosphere I grew up. So as far as talking about how to practice into it, it is difficult. I know when I got out of college and started working, I felt joy in giving money to various causes. I've always imagined doing this talk with Don Flaxman, who can talk much more about ways to cultivate and working with money. Don was president of Spirit Rock for many years. And when I was president of this center, we amassed a sizable amount of money to our building fund. And so Gil suggested I call up Don to ask about investment, where we could safely put the money but get some decent returns. I called him up, and we started talking about Donna. And we spoke for like an hour, and he told me how he worked with it. And I think afterwards, If he asked me to give money to develop a toxic waste fund, I think it would have gave money. I mean, I was so inspired by the talk. And he talks about working with it for those people who give a lot of money to things. Try giving less. Or for those, if you're going to give a certain amount of money, try giving a little more and see how it feels and work with it. One of the interesting things he told me is when they had fundraising at Spirit Rock, they'd always people make pledges and then they'd wait 2 weeks. And it wasn't so people would be inspired and give more money. It was actually the opposite. Some people felt so inspired and they realized they didn't have the financial resources to give that money. And so they gave them the opportunity to back out. And it's something I encourage everybody to work with and see how they feel about it and their attitudes towards money. That's something we're all very possessed with, money and time. Don gave this talk like 3 or 4 years ago, and we got in a discussion, and a topic came up about homeless people. Actually, that's not the topic I want to talk about. I'll talk about that and then get to this other topic. But as we know, we have a lot of homeless people in our society. And we also have a number of friends who have gone to India. And we have one right now from the center who's an Indian. A friend of mine got an email from him saying he's overwhelmed with the beggars. And it's difficult for me to give you an answer on this. Sometimes we feel guilty for not giving. I know with me, sometimes I give, sometimes I don't. But one thing I do make sure is if someone asks me for money, I acknowledge them, and I don't just ignore them and wish they go away. My wife told me a very touching story about a friend of hers as we were dating, and a homeless person came up to him, and he asked the homeless person if he was hungry, and said, yeah, and he took him out for lunch. What's nice about that, he was not only generous with his money, but also with his time. So there's so much that needs in the world, one could be overwhelmed, and that's where discrimination comes in. Some people feel guilty for having a lot of money. In the Jewish and Muslim religions, they stress giving a percentage of income to the poor and the indigent. And the important thing to remember here, it's a percentage. If one gave everything away, then one couldn't continue to give. The Buddha never encouraged people to give away all their money. He actually encouraged people to enjoy their wealth in a healthy way. However, as people practice more and more, I know people give more and more away and they need less and less. As the expression goes, there's a lot of people in this valley who are downwardly mobile, and it's not because they're out of jobs. They want to live much simpler lives. There are many inspiring examples of generosity in this center right here, and I'd like to give some of them. They're quite inspiring. How we got this center is inspiring. The Evansons were the ministers here in this center, and they're getting on in age, and they wanted to sell this building. And what was most important with them was to have people who could take over this building, and the type of people that would take it over and the practices that would be done. And they spent months interviewing Gil to make sure that we were the right people to take over this building. And what they did before they were going to sell this, they just had it appraised. And that's how much they were going to sell it for. And they didn't, they could have got a lot more money for it, but that's not what they were interested in. They were more interested in who was going to take over the place and how. When we've had our fundraisers, we've had two $100,000 contributions. One of them is interesting because we have absolutely no idea who gave the $100,000. It was given through a foundation. We don't even know whether it was a man or a woman. Imagine doing that, giving, you know, a large contribution and being anonymous. That's one of the things that's stressed in a lot of the fundraising here is we don't give special treatment to big donors or anything like that. Everybody's equal and everybody's equally appreciated. The second donor, some people on the old board know who it is. I've never met the person. I know the person's name. I don't remember it now, but he wishes to be anonymous. The fourth largest single donor was $15,000. That person lives in the Midwest and has never been to this center. The two most impressive donations when I was president that I was most impressed with was a person who gave $5. And why I was impressed is they wrote in a letter to me, they said they were out of work and they really wished to give more, but this is all they could give. The second one was from a 12-year-old who gave $20, and it wasn't a check, it was $20, in honor of another woman in the center. I was quite moved by that. So to sum up, generosity is a practice that can be cultivated. It's a practice. It is important to look at your intentions when you give. It's okay to feel guilty and stingy. Be kind to yourself. Generosity starts with yourself. Practice generosity regular, and you'll feel the great joy that people get from this. I want to end my talk with a Dear Abby. I think my last talk was ended with a Dear Abby. Here it is. I am a 14-year-old girl who learned something very special last holiday season. I learned there's more to Christmas than just getting gifts. It's also giving gifts. Some families can't afford to give their kids presents. My family participated in a program through my mom's work called Adopt a Family. Through this program, you receive a piece of paper with the name and address of a needy family. There's also a list of some of the items they want or need. We bought gifts for a mother and her two sons, who are 6 and 7. Instead of requesting DVD players and computer games, these kids wanted warm clothes and board games. Those little boys wanted things that are practical. The mother listed towels, washcloths, dishes, and a toaster. If more families quit thinking about what they want and gave more thought to what others need, they would also help a needy family around Christmas time and other times. If they do, it'll make their Christmas a whole lot better. So thank you all for listening. And if you have any questions or want to discuss anything, we can have a discussion. Yes?
I just wanted to mention, as part of the center, one of the things I find is that all the time people give, coming in, doing different things, just the fact that the whole center is run on volunteers. And the generosity of the Sangha is amazing to me to keep this place running, just because people feel that this is their home and they want to make sure it feels welcoming. And it's amazing how things get done with 5 minutes, 10 minutes of time, too. So there's been a lot of financial backing, but it's also pretty amazing to see how many people participate in doing just little things around to make it work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's also where I mentioned the attitude we have that if you get stressed out by doing any job, you should roll back or things will get done. It'll get picked up, and that's important too. Any other questions, comments? Yes?
I just wanted to acknowledge how much I appreciate what you said about when you see homeless people on the street and ask for money, you acknowledge their existence by responding to them and looking them in the eye. Something
that
I practice
as well. It's a way of being
generous to that
homeless person.
Right.
I just want to say something that I've experienced. So many times things happen to us so quickly. We're going like that. And it's tempting to dwell on the bad things. But, you know, it's really important to dwell on the good things. So when we feel things like generosity that come to us, when we talk about cultivating that, it really means really to absorb ourselves, you know, experience that feeling of generosity that we've cultivated or that we've, you know, in that moment we've just experienced. it's like you feel it in your heart, and it's there. And often we're just ready to move on to the next thing. Like, oh, I've got another thing to do. And for me, that's what slowing down, coming back into me, into my body, is all about. That's when I know it. It's in my heart. And I like to dwell in that mind state, because it's very healing and very healthy for me and for the person I've been generous with. It really, for me anyway, it expresses itself in that way.
You want to tell your generosity story?
I don't know if I should.
Lynn says yes.
About a week or two ago, I went over to Trader Joe's. I drove up and parked in front of the store, and there was a homeless man sitting very close to where I parked my car. And as I got out, he approached me and asked me if I could spare him some money. And I thought, yes, I think I can spare him some money. So I got my wallet out and I gave him a couple of dollars. And he looked at me and said, thank you. And I looked at him and made eye contact. And you know, I was really touched by him. I mean, I could have done more. So what happened is I walked down into the store and I realized that I could have done more. So I turned around and I walked back to the man and I pulled out a $20 bill and I gave it to him. And he was so surprised. And he said to me, I don't know what to say. He said, I have a veteran's disability check. It's going to come in the mail next month, but can I have your phone number? I'd like to pay you back. And I was just really touched, because this man, he wanted to help. He wanted to repay. And I was just very, very moved by that. So I bowed to him. and I really dwelt in the gift he'd given me. You know, he gave me a gift. He gave me an opportunity to share my good fortune. So anyway, that was my generosity story.
Any other questions or comments, or anybody else want to share in stories of generosity? You know, when you share stories of generosity, it's really inspiring to a lot of people. And the best one, Cheryl, I remember this was when we were at the Sangha of 1,000 Buddhas event over Thanksgiving, and one woman felt really good. She gave up this massive diamond ring. She says, well, I think Jack needs this more than I do. And then another woman said, she used to sit with Sylvia Boorstein. She says, you know, she saw that book, It's Easier Than You Think, so I figured I'd go check it out and see if it was easier than I think. But and once in a while in this center, we get people together with the volunteers. We did that one time. And we were out in Portola Valley, and why people volunteer and do things. And it's very inspiring. So thank you all for coming and for listening to me.